I was born in Germany in a small town outside the city of Leipzig, Saxony, about 6 miles from there. My father was a physician, and I had 4 older sisters and 2 younger brothers. I had no Jewish friends at the time, and I went to school in Leipzig. The school system is somewhat different than here. And when Hitler came to power, January 1933, I was 12 years old. On April 1st, 1933, the Nazis made the so-called boycott, and they posted stormtroopers in front of all the Jewish businesses, and they also posted them in front of the house where we lived, where my father had his praxis, and tried to stop the patients from going in. They did not succeed. Things simmered down a little bit, but they gradually got worse. We were kicked out of the sports club right away where we lived, and joined a Jewish sport club in town, and also we belonged to a German youth group. And in 1935, the so-called Nuremberg laws came out. Jews could not marry Gentiles and all kinds of business. In 36, were the Olympics in Berlin, and I was very much into sports, and one of my older sisters lived in Berlin. She had married there. And I went to Berlin, and I was able to get tickets for the stadium. And I saw Jesse Owens win the 100 meter. It was fantastic. Of course, Hitler would not congratulate him because he was black. In 1937, in Easter, I finished my school because I could no longer continue. And as I said, I was very much into sports, and they needed Jewish teachers at the Jewish schools because they were all kicked out of the other schools. And I took a one-year course in Stuttgart and became a physical education teacher. And from 1938, I taught at the Jewish school in Leipzig, both the public and the higher school. And I had some of the students, they were older than I was, who were in the upper classes. In October 38, the Nazis started, rounded up all, there were a lot of Polish Jews living in Germany, and it was almost impossible to become a German citizen. It was very difficult. And drove them to the border and pushed them into Poland. After a few days, the Poles would not let them in, and they started coming back. And I remember my father had a car, and we went to the station in Leipzig to pick up these returning Jews, and we took them to the Jewish school because their apartments were closed and locked, and most likely everything was confiscated. On November 8, 1938, a young man whose parents had been deported to Poland in Paris, he was so upset, he shot Mr. Von Rath, who was an employee at the German embassy in Paris, and killed him. The next day was Kristallnacht, I remember at 6 o'clock in the morning, my father had a night bell so patients could read him if they needed him at night. And a young man, patient of his, came up the stairs. My father opened the door and he told him, "Doctor, you don't know what's going on in town. Synagogue is burning and the Nazis are picking up all the Jewish men and sending them to concentration camps." One of my uncles was picked up. He was sent to concentration camp of Buchenwald. And my boyfriend told me what happened in his apartment. They came to pick up his father, who had been quite ill, and they opened his bedroom door, and they said, "Well, we're not going to take him. He's going to croak soon anyway." And on their way out, they saw a picture of my boyfriend. So they asked his mother, "So who is that?" "So it's my son. So where is he? We take him." And she showed him where his bedroom was. They opened his door, and he told them, "You better not come in, because I was just released from the hospital after 6 weeks of isolation because I had polio." And so what they did, fortunately, he had a Gentile doctor. They called this doctor at 6 o'clock in the morning, Dr. Lange, and asked him, "Can we take the Jew and pick him up?" So the doctor said, "Well, it depends. If you put him in the cell, leave him alone, okay. Otherwise, I cannot take the responsibility." And they left him. They did not take him. And the doctor, I think, probably saved his life. Before the Kristallnacht, my father had to turn in his license. He could no longer practice. And my sister and brother-in-law in Berlin, they had applied for visas for Bolivia, and they suggested to my father that we better also try to get a visa. It was very difficult. That was a problem. And we applied for visa for Bolivia, and on March 1st, 1939, we were able to leave Germany. My boyfriend, he was more fortunate. He had an uncle in the United States whom he had visited in 37, and he sent him an affidavit, and he was lucky because before he got sick with his polio, he had been at the American consulate in Berlin, had gotten his U.S. immigration visa for the United States. And he left Germany in January 1939. And before he left, he had printed out a sheet with dates for 2 years, and we were hoping that in 2 years, maybe we would get together. And we were marking off each day. So we left. Unfortunately, we had a terrible thing happen before we left. One of my older sisters, who was supposed to go with us, she was a nurse at the Jewish hospital in Berlin, and she wanted to stay there as long as possible because one of the doctors was her boyfriend. And after an infectious ear operation, she pricked her finger with an instrument, and she was dead within 24 hours. There was no penicillin, no drugs that could have helped her. So I went with my parents from Hamburg, where we were supposed to go the ship, to Berlin to her funeral. And then we finally left. We left on a South American ship, which was a half freighter, and there were about 150 passengers, all Jewish refugees going to South American countries. And while we were on the Atlantic, the ship was directed to make a stop in Baltimore. And so what I did, I sent a cable to my boyfriend who was in Richmond at the time and told him that we were going to be in Baltimore and it would be wonderful if we could meet. And we got into Baltimore and one of the immigration officers, they came on the ship already before we even docked. And he was talking to one of the passengers, and my father was standing nearby, and he said, "There's going to be a wedding on the ship, and Mr. Weinberger is getting married." So my father, he pricked his ears, and "Mr. Weinberger is the boyfriend of my daughter. We have no idea about a marriage." So all the passengers get called into the dining room, and they call me out right away and take my passport away. And I still didn't know. But so after a while, Hans climbed up the rope and he said yes. While he was waiting for the ship, he was standing next to an immigration officer and he asked him, he said, "Who are you meeting?" And so I told him and he said, "Well, you know what, why don't you get married while she's here and then you can get a preference quota and she'll get a visa much sooner than otherwise because the German quota was so oversubscribed it would have been years and years before getting the US visa." So anyway, the ship was met by ladies of the National Council of Jewish Women, the president and I think our vice president. And so in order to get a marriage license, you had to be in the state of Maryland at least 48 hours so before you could take out a license. So couldn't wait that long. So one of the ladies from the council, Mrs. Sobolov, whose husband was a judge, she took him in tow and went to her husband, and Judge Sobolov got the appropriate judge and who changed it and so he could take out a license. And the next day we were married on the ship. Assistant Rabbi Shaw from Temple Ohev Shalom came on the ship and he married us. Now everybody, all the other passengers, they could get off the ship but they wouldn't let me off because they thought I was going to jump ship and stay. So after, I think we were there maybe two more days and then we left for South America. And we arrived in Bolivia, which was, we got off the boat in Arica, Chile, and then had to take the train up to La Paz, Bolivia. And it was indescribable. We were so primitive, and the La Paz, where we went to, the altitude was so high. I mean, you couldn't catch your breath. It really took quite a while to get acclimated. And my father, the only way he could practice was by joining the Bolivian army, and that only on the basis of his German army service during World War I. And they shipped him to the jungles of Bolivia. And the president of the National Council, she and her husband, they also gave me an affidavit. The first one got lost in the mail. They had to make out another one because my husband's wasn't strong enough. And they also, what they did, they offered my husband a job in Baltimore, which was better than what he had in Richmond, so he went to Baltimore. And in November 1939, I got my American visa, and I was hoping to see my father before I was leaving, but it didn't work out. And so in February 1940, I left for the US, and I arrived in New York on March 5th, 1940, so it was about not quite 2 weeks before our first wedding anniversary. We had gotten married on St. Patrick's Day in 1939. So I got to Baltimore, and the president, Mrs. Dashrew, the first person she took me to was Harry Greenstein, who was the executive director of the Associated Jewish Charities at the time, to ask him to help me. Maybe you could get a job. And well, he did. I got a job next door at the Y cafeteria as a waitress. My husband wasn't too crazy about that, because his wife, a waitress, you know, couldn't be. But anyway, he appreciated the sandwiches, which I brought home for him. And the first summer, I became a counselor at Camp Woodland, which was the camp of the Associated Jewish Charities. And one of the campers was Martha Wyman. And she was a very unhappy camper, I must say. She's crying all the time. And after camp, we got an apartment on 2024 Park Avenue, and which was next door to where Herbert and Irma Risch lived. And we became the closest of friends. And I know Frank since the day he was born. I visited his mother at the hospital. And well, we're still friends.